Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Cinematic Universe. I'm your host, Joe Cunningham, and joining me to discuss the latest comic book movie and TV news are...
James Hunt.
And Reese Williamson, hello.
So, we're back for another month on the main feed with a whole bunch of news and probably a bit of nonsense thrown in there along the way. Any of our listeners that follow us over on Patreon will know that we have been going through Moon Knight recently. In fact, we have just recorded our final episode of the Moon Knight Patreon series, and we thought it'd be worth just doing a very quick recap on the main feed for any of our listeners who aren't over on Patreon.
So episode one opens and you meet the character, Mr. Moon Knight.
We've had some fun. Khonshu's cameoed. broad strokes. I kept saying this on our Patreon episode, but I love Stephen Grant. I love the character of Stephen Grant. No one seems to agree with me. I don't understand. I don't understand what anyone has enjoyed about the series Moon Knight. If you didn't enjoy Stephen Grant, because I thought Oscar Isaac's performance was great. I preferred the series early on when it was a bit fun and silly. Less so when it was getting into very dull plot machinations and people walking around dark pyramids. trying to find things that weren't going to matter 5 minutes later. What did you guys think about Moon Knight?
I really liked the costumes. I really liked Moon Knight's costume. I really liked his Mr. Knight costume. And I thought that the first two episodes where he's working in a museum were very relatable. And after that, it sort of goes downhill and I kind of wish I hadn't bothered.
I sort of echo James, but coming at it less from a costume point of view, I thought that there was so much juice in the initial premise, which was all over the trailers, of here's bumbling Stephen Grant locked inside a body with a badass mercenary Mark Spector. However, well, these two guys gotta get on with each other, and that was fun, and like that was the show that I was digging, and then. They start, going around tombs, and you meet a load of gods, and the fighting's bad, and the CGI was bad, and the stakes were very, almost got just more unclear episode to episode. but one thing that you guys haven't talked about that I mentioned a few times in the Patreon was that I really enjoyed May Kalamawi's Layla throughout the show. She didn't have a ton to do, although there weren't that many actors in the show, at all. But she didn't have a ton to do. But I just sort of found her energy. Oscar Isaac and Ethan Hawke, obviously, we know as performers, and they were really good in the show, given what they were given to do. But I just thought she was a compelling screen presence, as they say, and enjoyed her throughout. I would like to see more of her at the very least. But yeah, no, sorry. So bad show, bad ending, badly designed. The last episode, if the ending of your story is your story, then Moon Knight was terrible because the last episode was in my opinion, pretty dreadful and almost without any merit.
And I think the important thing is if you want to learn more about that in depth, We've done it in so much detail over on Patreon. And we've also watched Morbius. So if you watch Morbius and you want to know how bad we thought that was, that's on Patreon too.
And there's also this
how bad everything we've watched is on Patreon.
There's a scrappy indie picture that you may or may not have heard of called Mr. Doctor Strange in the scary, the mad verse. We'll be covering that on the Patreon as well.
I'm looking forward to that because we'll probably think that's good.
Can we talk about Morbius very quickly? Listeners on the Patreon will know that we spent quite some time with the Doctor. Dr. Michael Morbius is his name, and there's a whole movie about him. Anyway, the movie is kind of a mess. It's chopped to ribbons, but not even like in a fun, incompetent way like Venom, just in a not very fun way. But I was reading an interview with Welcome to the Family, Al Madrigal, and he was talking. I felt bad for making fun of him on our Morbius episode because he came across so well, and he was like, I had so much fun making that movie. We were in London. I went to the BFI every day, I went to the Bill Murray, and I just like, and he just sounds like he was like, honestly, people can criticize that movie all they like, but I had like the three best months of my life. I thought I was going to be the Sony Universe's Agent Coulson, because, you know, I referenced Venom, and he's like, and I felt like I had such funny stuff. Like every day I was coming in, I was delivering zingers, and then I watched the movie and none of it made the cut. And he was also saying like, there was a final act where me and Tyrese were fighting Matt Smith, and it all got cut because the sequence was taking place in daytime, and someone at Sony went, hang on, we're making a vampire movie, why would our finale not be at night? Which I think is a fair flag, right? But also meant that all of that stuff didn't make it in there. Yes.
That's a fun work email in the thread. Sorry, just a flag. just glad for the dailies come back. A lot of this stuff is in the daytime.
He's quite bright.
He's not that kind of vampire, he explicitly says.
Hashtag not all vampires, to be fair.
Yeah.
I wonder what Jared Leto's equivalent of go to the BFI every day and go to Bill Murray were in London.
I feel like, it, given that he stayed in Carrots the whole time, right? He was just hanging around morgues and blood banks.
Yeah, just in going from just public disabled toilet to public disabled toilet in central London. People like, that's Jared Leto. He shouldn't be in those. He's using that loo. I'm in a wheelchair.
He set up his own GP service surgery. He was operating out of the Nightingale Hospital at the height of COVID. But yeah, the other thing Al Madrigal, Welcome to the Family, Al Madrigal said was, the impression that he'd got was it wasn't even just COVID. It was because of COVID that movie sat with the studio for so long that they just kept messing with it and kept messing with it and kept messing with it. And they almost did it to themselves.
I can believe that because it's the sort of thing where you keep thinking, maybe we can improve this. Maybe we can make it more like what we want in the edit.
Yeah, this movie stinks. Can we do something to it so it doesn't smell so stupid? But if
you like,
so
the more you cut, the more you take away from one person's sort of vision, right?
Yeah,
for better or worse. Sure. I think there was a version of that movie that, you know, reflected what the director wanted to do with it, and then they just kept hacking away, and just made it worse by doing so.
And I won't spoil what actually happens in the movie because that's something we save for Patreon.
You got to pay for that.
Yeah. For instance, if you want to know the plot of Hereditary, head to our episode 5 of Moon Knight on Patreon. But yeah, the Michael Keaton stuff that's in the trailer is wild how it actually shows up in the movie. And you're like, it feels like you made a rod for your own back with the trailers, but like also with trailers that you were releasing kind of quite late into COVID after you'd already pushed it back once or twice and that you already knew it was coming out after Far From Home and on No Way Home. God, we'll never get those right. And again, you wonder whether like, yeah, maybe it did all make sense and there was an edit that was locked and it was like, boom, we're going to go with this. And then someone went, let's fuck with it again. Well, that that doesn't work with what we've shown in the trailer. Doesn't matter. We're doing it.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, modern Hollywood, quote unquote. Maybe it did all make sense at some point before the release. So there's a version of this that made some sense.
Anyway, so that was Dr. Michael Morbius.
Yes, it is true that I did rank on Letterboxd Morbius 3 stars, which was the same as the Batman, and that's a choice that I will live with, but one I will not edit. I'm not editing those.
My favourite part of the Morbius episode is your dawning realisation that you had made a huge error in ranking it 3 stars.
Yeah, I feel like if the day before I did that ranking and Ethan Hawke from Moon Knight did the scales weigh on my hand, I'll be fine, conscience clear. Day after, I'm getting burned up.
No. You do understand that that Ethan Hawke judges future evil. Reese, you're
fucked. Oh, shit, yeah.
You're fucked either way.
Moon Knight. The show made sense. Good characters. I followed it.
So we saw Dr. Michael Morbius. We didn't have the best appointment, but...
I got 2 colonoscopies. I don't know what happened. I don't know who. I went into the wrong door. I almost actually got a double COVID for the first COVID vaccine. I almost got a second vaccine immediately because I went. It was like lots of doors in my GP clinic. I would go in the one, get the jab, go out, and I'm trying to get out. And then the person's like, "Oh yeah, just go turn around." I'm like, "Okay, turn around." Then I go into another door, and then I sit down. I'm like, a bit confused. Okay, I'm just trying to leave. I'll sit down. And the guy's like, "Yeah, pull your shirt up, sleeve up." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, okay, fine." And then he goes towards my arm with a needle. And I'm like, "No, I just had this. I just literally just had this a minute ago."
Do you know what? At the beginning of that, I was like, "This is a really tortured bit from Reese with the colonoscopy thing." But then when it segued into your real life incompetence, I was like, "Oh no, this
checks out." Yeah. This makes sense with this guy.
Okay, let's move on to the comic book movie and TV news that we've got over the past month. And I guess the big one was we got the first trailer for what I've written down here, Thor Ragnarok, but that's not the name of the movie. That was the name of the last movie. It's Thor Love and
Homecoming.
Thunder. I've written it down.
Love and Thunder.
Love and Thunder. Hey, he's the god of thunder. He's very lovable. It's, you know, Taika Waititi is back, and he's got another movie that looks tonally close to what he did with Thor Ragnarok. I rewatched this trailer just before we started recording, and my main takeaway watching it with my earphones plugged in is Sweet Child of Mine's a banger, isn't it?
Oh, good song. Good song.
Oh my god, it's always good.
It is.
This is such, I'll just jump in to say, forget, well, I just think this is, my first takeaway when I watched this was, oh my god, this movie's going to make so much money, because the trailer is so perfectly calibrated to be appealing to fans and to people who've spent, do you know what I mean? Just, it's the song, it's the...
To people who like this shit already.
Yes, yeah, exactly, yes. It's so kind of perfectly calibrated to that. And I also think it's such a. I think if you were wondering, like, oh, I want, you know, so you're hearing the press, Tiger's going to do another Thor, like it's the fourth one, and he's been in, you know, and he gets arcs in the Avengers movies. Like, what is left? What is left for this character? You know, and then Natalie Portman's in it. I don't really. How's it all going to fit together? The Guardians are in it, but actually, literally, like the opening seconds of this trailer, where I can't remember the line, but it's like, oh, I don't really know what to do with myself, so I'm going to figure it out. Yeah. Like, oh, that's the movie. Oh, of course. And, you know, and that will come up against, I imagine, a sort of I know exactly what I'm doing version of Thor, version of Jane Foster for Thor. And so it's just a magic, it's a real magic trailer in terms of, I feel like I completely know not what the movie's going to be, but what the kind of what the story is and what the idea is, and how it feels, you know, distinct enough from all those other Thor appearances in the past, and then
I think when we've seen this character before, and so, you know, when the Ragnarok trailer turned up, it was like, oh wow, this looks different. How's this all going to come together? And, you know, basically its job was to throw out a bunch of stuff that had happened before and kind of recalibrate. But I think the MCU did a really good job with Thor in the subsequent Avengers movies, mm-hmm. Particularly Infinity War, of just kind of going like, oh, this is now a guy that's lost everything. And they kind of reconciled the two versions of the characters that we'd seen before that, which is kind of like brash, cocky, but competent hero with Taika's himbo version of the character, right? and then kind of put that, you know, nice wedge of like melancholy on top of him as well, which was consistent with what they'd done with the character, which was to remove everyone that he loved from his life. I agree. I think the element of this trailer that gives me the most confidence is that single moment where he's like, yeah, I kind of need to figure shit out. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I mean,
which is also very related. I mean, you know, we're all guys in our, I forget our age, but that's a very human story. You know,
Reese, we are in our early 30s. And James is like, I think
significant. I don't even really know.
Dead. I'm still in my 30s. I'm still
just keep on grabbing on
for the moment.
Hold on tight.
You're saying that out loud, James, but it doesn't sound true.
No, I don't buy it. I don't buy it for a second.
anyway, so it's, you know, it's a young, virile, emotionally stunted, men babies like me and you. We can identify with this, and for James, it's like watching TikTok. James, that's an app on the phone. It's kind of, do you remember Vine?
It's like a phone thing. Yeah,
do you remember Vine?
Guaranteed, I watch more TikTok than either of you guys.
Sure, I don't watch any TikTok. But it's a human story, and you know, I think counterpoint again. Let's not even talk about the trailer itself, which we'll get to, but I think it's Taika Waititi now, and audiences' sort of response to that name and is different to before Ragnarok came out, mm-hmm. And I wonder whether, yeah, I wonder if Waititi, Taika, the filmmaker, has changed for good or for ill, or he has more power with this movie, and that again for good or for ill. I think some of those are question marks for me personally. But yes.
So that thing I think is either going to be the film's greatest strength or its greatest weakness, because I think the easiest comparison point for this movie is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Which I think kind of ramps everything up, and that means that some of the stuff is even better. But some of it is just too much. It's too long. It's baggy and unwieldy. And I worry about a fully unleashed Taika. The stuff that I'm more confident of is he doesn't have to come in and go, I don't care about this whole half of the movie. Can we just get through this? Can we get through that? And we'll reshoot that in front of a green screen. I don't give a fuck. I'm doing the comedy bits over here. Like if he is actually engaged on a plot level this time and you know, cares about the whole thing, then great. But also, I don't know, because I thought that Jojo Rabbit was a piece of shit. So
yeah, hated it.
hated it so much.
Hated Jojo Rabbit. Yeah. So let's hope we get Ragnarok.
I hated how confident it was in its in itself and what it was doing and what it was saying. When I found some of the stuff in it like not personally offensive, but offensive. I was like, How are you treating that with that level of, and then when it did lurch into its, I don't know, I really didn't like that movie.
Like JoJo.
For me, the concern is he made a film about Nazis that didn't have anything to say about Nazis.
Yeah, that was a big problem for me. Yeah, it was like a film about Nazis in whilst Donald Trump was in office.
Yeah.
And it had no modern day parallels. Yeah,
which makes me worry about his, you know, interest in actually saying anything. But on the other hand, if you're not making a film about Nazis, maybe that sort of sensibility might work. Like, I think this trailer especially, I just thought, oh, this is, it's just going to be Thor having a relatively good time after being through the ringer. It looks like it's going to be a feel-good movie. And if we're doing a feel-good movie that's not about being a Nazi, then great.
It's interesting. We never see too much of these movies in the first trailer. And I would say 90% of this trailer is probably first act.
Yeah, there's a lot of first act here, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to end act one meeting Jane Foster Thor, right?
You'd imagine.
The bit you see in the trailer is he's going to get thin by doing the chain thing.
We're going to have an 80s montage, absolutely. Yeah.
He's going to, then I think he'll be revealed, that reveal in the trailer of when he throws the thing off, he's got the red, the sort of Star-Lord-esque red jacket on, like that'll be the first moment we see him after his montage. Then I think you get that sequence with the Guardians, and then probably the bit in the trailer, the gag of, you know, look at what you love, and then I meant them, I was just listening. That's probably toward the end of Act 1, and that's the end of the Guardians bit of the movie.
Oh, yeah,
and the rest of it is.
Yeah. If anything, I think the Guardians will be done in 5 or 10 minutes, mm-hmm. and then it will be, you know, Thor and Korg set off for Thor to try and find himself, and maybe we check in with Valkyrie, and maybe we go and see the bit up with Zeus and the gods, and at some point he will find out, oh, actually, there is this dude who's going around and he's killing all of the gods. Can you help? And he's like, well, I'm not sure if that's me anymore. And then at some point he will get pulled into that.
I do like the implication that he's going to be like a pacifist sort of retired Thor, and then he's going to see Jane Foster filling his role, and you know, maybe that's going to drag him sort of out of that funk.
You do wonder, one comment to make is, who's hard to say, right? But I hope that they haven't just got Natalie Portman back as fucking Thor to just be like a motivating factor on real Thor. Do you know, like that? I just don't, I don't think she would have signed, I mean, I guess she, there's some level, maybe she would have just signed up just to be a superhero. That's cool enough, but I, you know, that because we're talking about this, you know, the Taika comedy and the hangout Korg and Thor comedy, but actually let's not forget that the Jane Foster Thor Jason Aaron run is an excellent comic run because of its real emotion, of, you know, the real stuff that it's dealing with, her cancer, her coming to terms with that, and the Thor stuff at the same time. That's a this movie must have that in.
How does that end, guys?
She becomes Valkyrie.
Yeah.
Okay.
But because comics never end. That I'm sure the better version of that is I think maybe she does die actually, you know, and then just comes back to life and she's Valkyrie, because of course the Valkyries have this connection with, you know, with Valhalla and with death anyway. So I think that's how they tie those bits together. Okay. But I'm pretty sure that Jason Aaron kind of ends it and she dies of her cancer after having saved the world many times, I believe. And it's a very cathartic and emotional conclusion. I'm not saying that's what they're going to do with the movie, but one hopes that side of the story is you hope that you see, what you don't hope is that it's only at the end of Act 2 that Thor realizes who this is. You know, I think you've got to get to that bit earlier because you've got to have those two interacting based on their past history. But that she's, you know, that dynamic has to be, that relationship has to be interesting.
This is the other thing that I really hope. I assume that they're doing the thing that I hope, which is, this is the Jane Foster we know, and it's not a multiverse Jane Foster.
Oh, gotta be.
Who happens to be Thor.
That would be so, no way. That would be so boring if they did the latter. It has to be Thor.
It would be, wouldn't it? That's what I mean. I do think that that's what they're doing, but also, can't rule it out, can you?
Yeah, God, I guess we're in the days of the multiverse, you know. This is what Michelle Yeoh and Benedict Cumberbatch have done to us, and Elizabeth Moss in that Apple TV show. We're in the multiverse now.
The other thing about this trailer that I am kind of like, that gives me pause is there is a lot in this trailer that feels like it is, however much changes in the MCU, nothing really changes. So it's like not that any of it matters, but all of those, you know, those little beats in the last movie about he loses his eye, Mjolnir is destroyed, he goes off and forges Stormbreaker, Asgard is destroyed, and then in this trailer, it's like, okay, so all of that stuff is undone. And yeah, we don't have Asgard anymore, but what we do have is Olympus. And it's basically like Asgard, but more gods, where Thor is not the important one. And actually, I'm not sure whether like low status Thor at this point is that interesting, because he's kind of like pivoted to, like, from a personality point of view, he feels low status. So actually I quite liked the idea of him being a god whilst also having all of these character flaws. And I'm not sure turning up and kind of being the least important god in Olympus and kind of the butt of the jokes there is as interesting as his status quo in Asgard was.
Well, we'll see how it sounds like you think that we spend more time on Olympus than I do, because I think
Olympus is probably as important to this movie as Asgard was to the previous movies, which let's not forget, Asgard is a people, not a place. we learned that comprehensively over the course of those movies. I just think it's going to be somewhere where stuff happens, and It's just another home base that exists above all of the rest of the action where the gods live.
I think that's an act one sequence where Russell Crowe and whoever's playing.
But that's what Asgard always was.
They all get killed by Gore in the first act.
Yeah,
that's what
I think the reason Olympus is there is so that they can smash it to bits 100%. Completely.
And so you can see Christian. I think that also there is something in the casting of Russell Crowe, you know, a movie star, will give weight to the sequence where Christian Bale, another movie star, you know, kills Russell Crowe, who's also playing Zeus, who's a very famous god. Early on, to establish his, you know, villain creds.
There's zero chance we don't meet other gods in Olympus who end up being important or end up being like recurring MCU characters. Like, it feels like a new opportunity to build out that supporting cast.
Yeah, especially because Hercules is a really good character in the MCU. Who should be in the films?
Yeah. I mean, is that not a probable mid credits character, right?
Yeah.
Cast it. Fan cast it. Dream cast it.
Well, Hercules in Marvel comics, right, is kind of like big and beardy, right? Am I right?
And also bisexual, mostly. Fan cast it. Fan cast it.
You know I can't fan cast. Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm gonna need some serious time to think about this, Reese.
Who's got a good beard as an actor? Young actor beard.
We should move on to some of the headlines at some point.
No, this is good. The only person that's coming to my mind right now in a kind of, I think, in a more subversive way, in like, who is this little cutie upstart, kind of the new kind of dreamboat god of the MCU? It's only little Jacob Tremblay, isn't it?
What? Paul Mescal. I'm going with Paul Mescal. Jacob Tremblay, he's like 12 still or whatever.
He's 15.
Okay, he's too young to play Hercules.
Cute little dreamboat Hercules, like in the animated version when he's not grown up yet.
That's a different franchise. I'm going with Paul Mescal, but he doesn't have the beard, he has the chain. And that's his beard equivalent.
Nah, he's not ripped enough, is he? He's not.
Yeah, this is what happens though. They get ripped. They get ripped.
Isn't his whole kind of vibe is he's sexy because he doesn't really care.
Skinny wayfish.
Yeah, like he's sexy in a heroin addict kind of way.
Oh, okay, good.
I've never watched Paul Mescal.
Paul, I'm going to Cannes in a couple of weeks. Yeah, that's right. And Paul's got two movies there, so if I bump into him, I'll apologise on your behalf.
I've never seen him anything. I've just sort of normally seen him like on Twitter, and he's got a fag, and he's like,
oh, he's still a smoke.
Yeah, he's. he's the like kind of bad boy supporting character from an episode of Skins.
I've got a one for Hercules, Nick Offerman.
Yeah. I mean, Nick Offerman would have been. Nick Offerman, I think, at this point, has similar to Russell Crowe's Zeus vibes.
yeah, fair.
Listen, let's think about it. Let's just.
Zach Galifianakis. I'm just thinking of beards. Kurt Russell as Santa Claus, as Hercules. He'd be a good Hercules. Oh, Wyatt Russell. No, he's already in it. Fuck. He's the guy.
No. Other things that I was less convinced by in the trailer.
We're still doing trailers.
Yeah. This is the big news.
It's like 20 minutes on 90 seconds of trailer.
Yeah, of course. What else are we going to talk about that people care about as much as the?
Okay, last point. Okay.
Oh shit, James is bringing down the hammer. Okay, you've got to have a good last point, Joe.
Girl boss in a suit. King Valkyrie was. I hope there's something more going on than that, because that. Oof, I don't know. Felt like a very like first draft idea.
Well, isn't there? I was thinking about this earlier in our chat, which I think we're talking for about 3 hours now on the trailer. I don't know that Valkyrie doesn't have much of a character in Ragnarok, and obviously that's the first time she appears, and she's not really in Avengers. So I wonder whether. This is an opportunity, and again, this is like Taika good v bad, right? But I feel like he can kind of write any version of that, because it's kind of weird that she ends up as the Queen of Asgard. It is a bit weird because she left Asgard.
She's the King of Asgard. Stop being so misogynistic, Ruth.
But that does that make sense? Now we're sort of thinking about it. Did that moment make sense? Really? Did it? No.
It makes sense if you assume that 5 years of character development has happened off screen.
Oh, sure, yes. In the 5 years we don't see, she, I don't know, becomes girl boss. She,
yeah.
You know, well, and she reads The Dropout.
It makes sense from a point of view of she's one of the few characters that we actually know
that are left
in Asgard. And also it does fit into the whole, like, oh, the Valkyries used to protect Asgard and they were banished and they were brought. Yeah. So. Yeah, I think it fits.
It's not wholly surprising.
No. But I hope for more from Tessa Thompson in this movie. And I'm sure we will get it. I don't think her being bored in a suit is going to be the whole vibe in this movie.
Do you think there's a three-way kiss between Korg, her, and Natalie Portman? captured by a cheeky snapper.
Yes.
Cool.
I think that I've probably talked mostly about things that I am unconvinced by in this trailer, but broadly what I was convinced by was just
Hemsworth.
Well, Hemsworth's great. I do feel like they figured out this character. It's a good opportunity to you know, do a whole movie after they figured out the best version of this character. It's taken them three full movies and like four part movies, but they have got there. And then also just, you know, with the music, the tone, the comedy, like I'm sure the Guardian stuff is going to be a riot. And you know, the visuals do look, you know, I'm not here saying like, at Marvel, one perfect shot or anything like that, but I do think as the
every frame of painting,
yeah, as the silly CG goes, this looks fun and it has bright colors, and I am absolutely here for hench as fuck Natalie Portman as Thor. I hope it pisses all the wrong people off as much as it is doing now.
You really wonder, our last point on this, we were talking for, I think, a day and a half. Last point is, it really made me wonder where this, you know, could this be the last appearance of Hemsworth, actually? That this is the setup of the movie, as we see it from the trailer, is actually a good way to, by the end of the film, have truly concluded, you know, his arc. Because I do, you know, if the whole movie is, I'm trying to figure figure out who I am, and I don't want to be a superhero anymore. You know, it's not going to end with, I don't know, is it going to end with him being like, I'm a superhero again, or is more likely the ending, you know, he's at peace with some version of himself. Not you know, we get him as Don Blake at the end, depowered. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because you know, how do you, you know, we talked about this going into Avengers Endgame. Like, how do you give these characters endings where they don't die? Because I don't think killing Thor would make much sense. But then, what do you do with him where you're like, it makes sense that now one of the most powerful characters in the MCU doesn't turn up when things are going down?
this is going to be my suggestion, is at the end of this film is him going, I'm going to go and reform the Avengers. And then he turns up in the next Avengers movie.
Yeah,
like if the start of this movie is him having a crisis of, you know, whether he wants to fight anymore. The end of the movie is him deciding, like, no, the world needs people to protect it. This is my calling. This is who I am. I'm going to go restart the Avengers, and that's how they come back together.
Except that this version of the character, unless you're sold on the arc of this character in this movie, this version of the character doesn't read at all as a leader, as a, you know. It's not just that doesn't want to do the superhero stuff anymore. It's that he's a jokey character.
I like the idea of taking that character and, you know, having him outlive everyone else and having him outgrow everyone else by virtue of the fact that he's the immortal one who doesn't die. Like, that for me would be a really good thread to have Thor around for another 4 or 5 movies, even until eventually he takes his place as king of Asgard. Like, that's the end point for the character, is that he renounces being a warrior to go be the king that he was born to be.
Or does he go off and it's like, look, I'm going to rebuild Asgard with my, you know, with my bare hands. Like, that's what I'm going to, proper Asgard, not this tourist attraction in Iceland. I'm going to go off and do that. And actually then, you know, that is the thing that there has to be a thing that he goes off to do. That means he can't just, you know, come in with his lightning bolts and... Because he also feels kind of overpowered at this point. Do you know what
I mean? We've been talking about this for 30 minutes, so...
Listen, we haven't. We talked about seeing Dr. Michael Morbius.
Yeah, it's 37 minutes in.
No.
So I've just got another, like, 8 things to say. It's 8 or 9. When Joe finishes dying.
And the fun thing is that this is, of course, only part one of a 2-part movie.
What?
Well, the as I've mentioned in the past, the second part focuses on Thor playing football. Okay, so we're going to move on to our next piece.
nice and weak to finish on. I like it.
So our next piece of news, which I promise I'm not making this up, although I don't understand most of the words in this headline.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
From Deadline.com. Bad Bunny to play Spider-Man character El Muerto in standalone Marvel pick for Sony. Now, am I old? Not as old as James, but am I old or am I just not relevant for not knowing who or what a Bad Bunny is?
You're old. You're a bit old. Yeah.
Do you know do you know Bad Bunny, Reese?
I know that he's a Mr. Music Man. That's what I know about Bad Bunny.
He is a Puerto Rican rapper.
Oh.
And was a professional wrestler, I think.
Oh, okay.
And I only know this from having TikTok. Looked him up after this announcement.
Okay. But yeah, I'd miss this. And actually, you put in the... Can I be deep behind the curtain? We put in our group chat the list of news stories we were going to cover. And I feel like you, James, you put in some stuff and then a new text, and it was El Muerto. And I thought you were referring to the Thor trailer as like the big one, the death, El Muerto. I had no idea that this was... separate story, and I was like, James is doing like fun nicknames for stuff. That's kind of fun. we can talk about that on mic, but actually, it's its own real story. Okay, what is that? What is El Muerto?
Well, Reese, why don't you tell us everything you know about the famous Marvel character El Muerto?
Is he a buddy of Ghost Rider? I mean, I just have no idea.
Right, I'm gonna read you the synopsis.
Cool.
Bad Bunny is a Latin Grammy winner and platinum selling recording artist. He made a surprise appearance at Sony's panel at CinemaCon, where it was announced that he would be playing El Muerto. Now, Reese, the character of El Muerto, aka Juan Carlos, was a superpowered wrestler who originally fought Spider-Man in a charity wrestling match. So, think Rocky 3, Apollo Creed, Rocky 4, Apollo Creed, and Ivan Drago, in which he nearly unmasked the web-slinger before being stung by Spider-Man with a paralyzing poison. After his oppressor, El Dorado, came to claim his life, he was saved by Spider-Man, after which the two teamed up to defeat Dorado.
Wow, okay.
Can I add just a quick addendum to that as well?
Please.
He dies as well in his first and only appearance.
Well, so he does die.
He does die. Yeah.
After that, so they defeat El Dorado, but he still dies.
Yeah.
Oh, sucks to be him.
This is when you think, you know, when the Sony, I forget what that, I believe the official title is the Sony multiverse of characters based upon Peter Parker and his Spider-Man friend. Characters, multiverse characters. But like every week, it feels like every week goes by and the story is, oh, well, that's ridiculous. What a ridiculous project. And then the week later, like, oh, that's much more ridiculous. That's much more of a barrel
scrape. I am confident this is at the very bottom of the barrel.
So
this character appeared in one issue in Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 6 from 2006. And his power is that he has a luchador mask, which gives him superhuman strength.
Hmm.
And that is not enough to keep him alive.
So let me tell you how this has come about. Because I think the El Muerto part of this is hilarious, because it is it's Sony deciding to make a movie out of one issue villain that no one's heard of.
I mean, just quickly, what they've done is they've gone, we want to do a project with Bad Bunny. The only way we can sell that is by tying it to a superhero movie. Do we own any Latin superheroes who are wrestlers?
James, I'm gonna explain it to you.
Go on.
So, apparently, Bad Bunny is due to appear in Bullet Train, the David Leitch movie, which is a Sony property. Which according to Deadline, is a movie they're very high on. I saw the trailer. I thought it looked good. It's got Brad Pitt in it. God, who else? Reese, have you seen the trailer for Bullet Train?
Yeah, it's...
It's loads of people, isn't it?
The guy from Atlanta.
So it's Brad Pitt.
It's Paperboy, right?
Brad Pitt, Bad Bunny, Sandra Bullock, Joey King, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, star of Craven the Hunter, Lady Gaga, Logan Lerman, Brian Tyree Henry, Zazie Beetz, Karen Fukihara, Haruyuki Sanada, Masayoka off of Hero. So, yeah, fun cast, directed by David Leitch, the John Wick guy. So, apparently, that movie already led to Aaron Taylor-Johnson landing the lead in Kraven the Hunter. And that what happened with Bad Bunny was that they were keen, after working with him on that, to find a starring vehicle from him. So he went through the Spider-Man library looking specifically for Latin characters, came across El Muerto and took it to the studio, and they went, okay, sure, we'll do that. Which is wild, but I guess it's hilarious that Sony are doing this, but on the flip side, I guess it probably speaks to, you know, it speaks to the desperation of the situation that's the character that he's having to go to find a Latin character that he can play that would actually be a fit for him.
In fairness to Marvel, there are more Latin characters in their universe. It's just that they weren't part of the Sony deal.
Yes, but then so the question would then be, who are those Latin characters that are getting starring vehicles at the other studios? There aren't. So it speaks to, you've had to find the studio that's gone, yes, we would like to have a superhero movie with a Latin lead, and then mine our IP to find that character. I know we've got Blue Beetle coming over at DC as well, but I don't know. It's funny because it's El Muerto and it's happening alongside all of the other random shit that they're doing at Sony. But it does make you wonder at some point, like, maybe they're not allowed, but could they just not create a new character?
I mean, there's no reason. This is sort of going to be my point, which is that El Muerto is so obscure. There's almost no reason to tie it to the Spider-Man universe anyway. If you're going to do a Latin superhero, you might as well make it an original property. Like, no, do we think that anyone is actually going to go and see this based on the fact that it is a Spider-Man adjacent character?
Or
do
yes, of course.
But would more people go if it wasn't?
No.
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 I'm not so sure.
No, I am 172% sure that more people will see this because it has the Marvel logo and it's a Marvel movie based on it. If it wasn't, if it had just be a random movie about that's kind of got superhero vibes, but it's about a wrestler.
But at least they'd own it then. At least they could commercially exploit it.
I don't think it's a paper thin concept, right? All that they've got here is the IP, and the IP is not El Muerto. The IP is a character from a Marvel comic book. The thing that I wonder is, if they are going to start going obscure like this, and it's not going to be like Spider-Man's, you know, kind of A-list rose gallery, that just distance it from Spider-Man, have it be all of these characters that, yes, come from Spider-Man comics, but create your own world around them. The same way that the MCU had to kind of like figure itself out whilst not having most of the most famous Marvel characters in it to begin with. Mm-hmm. Like, just figure out a way that you can have a world where Morbius and Venom and Kraven the Hunter and Elmer and whoever else you want to mine from, like, two issues of a Spider-Man comic at some point, you know, in the past 60 years. But then just don't make Spider-Man, like, don't reference Spider-Man at all. Don't do what you do in the trailer and in the post-credit sequence of Dr. Michael Morbius.
But they are planning for that. They clearly have their eye on, I think, on what happens when, and it's not an if, but it's a when. Like, one of two things will happen. Tom Holland will stop wanting to be Spider-Man at some point, you know, and probably at the same moment, Marvel will sort of not then see the value in continuing to pay or to give such a slice of that of the work that they're doing to Sony for the Spider-Man movies and then maybe that changes 5 years later than that point, but Sony are they not planning for that moment? And they are like, because it's funny, we talk about, me and Joe particularly talk about Venom and how good those Venom movies are and how fun they are, but
we talk about how fun they are, not how good they are.
But they do that is the proof of concept in a way, because I don't know if James agrees, but those don't really feel like sort of particularly trying to be any of any famous Venom comics, particularly like that dynamic and the tone. Yeah. Like, what that is a star vehicle for Tom Hardy who has gotten to do whatever he wants with that basic premise, and that spun into movies that we like. And fine, we didn't like Morbius that much, although I liked it as much as a movie called The Batman. That's my grave. But maybe it's not the worst idea to be like, okay, we got the extra juice from always being able to. And I always think back to that Morbius Twitter. I referenced it in the Morbius episode we did, but the Morbius like Twitter video that I kept on seeing on my Twitter, which was Jared Leto just talking about Marvel again and again, this iconic Marvel character. You could see a Twitter video in 2 years where it's Bad Bunny on a little captioned video talking about, it's so fun for me to bring this iconic Marvel character to life. I'm such a fan of Marvel comics.
That's what I'm agreeing with you, Reese. That yes, go Marvel, 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 Marvel.
But you can, you sort of,
I think, I think your, it's a bad idea to keep trying to have any
waiting around for Spider-Man.
Yeah, to be waiting around for Spider-Man, because I just think by the time it happens, you go, okay, I've seen Spider-Man in a movie with Iron Man and Captain America and Thor and the Guardians of the Galaxy and all of these other characters. I don't care that he's in a movie with Kraven the Hunter and El Muerto and Madame Web. And Morbius, Dr. Michael Morbius.
All of this said, this movie is never actually coming out, though, is it?
I don't know. I mean, they're making Madame Web, they're making Kraven. Like, those movies are coming out. So, and Bad Bunny is, but he is a big, he is a star.
How many times can they lose money on a crappy Spider-Man spin-off before they go, okay?
They're not losing money.
And right, it does sound like that. It sounds like they think that Bad Bunny really pops. I'm aware how old I sound, but every time I say Bad Bunny, I just do think like someone's made that up. That's not real. But Bad Bunny, it sounds like they think he pops in Bullet Train. So say he does pop in that movie and it's a big hit, and actually you do have this new rising star, then it kind of doesn't matter. It's like, okay, now we've got the vehicle with this actor, Latin representation. Can we kind of like chase some of that, the what Marvel got with Black Panther, which is
some of that sweet In the Heights money.
Well, some of that representation dollar.
Yeah.
And I also think it's wild that some of these other movies are happening. So maybe this one will happen too. You look at what DC are doing and they're kind of just going like, content, Joker. Right? It's not even just like we're making movies for theatrical release now. It's like, we want content. We want stuff for our streaming service. We want stuff for this. We want stuff for that. And it doesn't seem like the expectation is necessarily to make money anymore. It's almost like, can we build a pot? Not immediately.
Can we make it at cost and then put it out?
Interesting given recent events, but can we do a Netflix and just kind of build up a content library that people want to keep returning to?
One more thought on this, because I've decided that I actually quite like this news story, because we've been told that for years, like, oh, there are no movie stars anymore. It's IP led. People don't go to watch a Chris Hemsworth movie. They go to watch Chris Hemsworth as Thor, and Chris Evans and Downey Jr. and all that. this news story feels like a counter argument to that, which is, okay, no, this guy, but this performer who's a star already, Bad Bunny, pops in this other movie that we've made. We're going to put some chips on him being a movie star and connect with audiences. And yeah, fine, it doesn't matter. You know, we'll pick something from our bullshit IP library and make a movie around him. But the basis of the bet is him, not the IP. I want to believe in that.
You're living in the past.
But yeah, it would be great if that is what we return to more. I think that we can have movie stars again and not just characters.
Top Gun Maverick's coming out later.
Oh my god! Don't, James. Don't get too excited on Mike. He's back, and I don't mean horny on main. I'm not even excited about Maverick being back at this point. I'm just excited to see a new Tom Cruise movie. It's been so long. Okay, should we jump over to a good news story, one that I think we can all unequivocally agree is good for everyone involved?
Go on.
John Watts, who is no longer directing the Fantastic Four movie.
I mean, after No Way Home, I'm sort of disappointed about this because I thought. I thought No Way Home had its heart in the right place, and I was excited for a Fantastic Four movie after that.
If you think it has its heart in the right place, that is a movie that was screenwritten by committee. I think three movies in, it is fair to say that John Watts is no auteur.
No, he isn't.
And like, yeah, he can obviously work within a system and deliver mostly competent movies that make the studio happy. And I'm sure, I doubt this is a situation where he was sacked.
It does genuinely seem to be a creative differences thing where he just went, you know, I don't actually want to make this movie that you guys want me to make.
Yeah, and you know, bringing, you know, doing the Fantastic Four, and I think, you know, it feels like an important project for Marvel because you know the potential that those characters have, but we also know how easy it is to get those characters wrong on screen, and that for, you know, mainstream audiences are going to need some convincing that a Fantastic Four movie is going to be anything less than utter shit. Like, that's not a prospect that Marvel have faced most of the time. Like, most of the characters, even if it is a character that's been done before, like Spider-Man, it's generally something that audiences are kind of there for already. And, you know, I think it, for me, I would like to see someone who can impose a bit of personality on that movie. Whether that's possible, still possible within the, I do think it is. I do think it is because of, you know, Guardians and Thor, and yet to see what Sam Raimi's managed to do on Doctor Strange. But I would like it to be someone comes in, it's their thing, or they go back to Peyton Reed, who has been wanting to make a Fantastic Four movie for 20 years. So,
I mean, my slight counterpoint to that is that when they put Spider-Man in the MCU, he had three very bad movies preceding him, and John Watts was the guy who delivered a decent Spider-Man movie.
But I still think people were excited for Spider-Man, and also John Watts got to pick it up off the back of a successful character introduction in another movie.
I mean,
like, I think the proposition is different for the Fantastic Four because they don't have that profile that Spider-Man has. You don't have kids walking around with Fantastic Four lunchboxes.
I mean, not at the moment. Again, maybe because I'm a bit older than you guys. I remember when the Marvel Action Hour with the Fantastic Four and Iron Man was like appointment viewing on Saturday mornings.
It's back in the 60s, right?
It's not been that long since the Fantastic Four were an exciting property. And I think people know, oh, this is the MCU version. This will be a good version of those familiar superheroes.
I think for nerds, yes, that's true, that it hasn't been that long since it was an exciting property. I think for, you know, your audience member who maybe turns up to one in three, one in four Marvel movies, you know, the one that turns up for the big ones, I don't think they would be thinking, oh, Fantastic Four, that's one of those appointment ones like a Spider-Man movie is.
I think Fantastic Four would do better than Shang-Chi just off the back of the name.
Yeah, no, it has recognition, but it also has baggage, and I think it is more than any of the stuff they've done recently, it's really important to get this one right.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's just like they made 5 Transformers movies and they all did well, so.
But
like baggage doesn't matter so much as recognizability, and people will go, oh, it's been 10 years since the bad Fantastic Four movie, I'll go see another one if the trailer's good.
We've talked about how it even pre the Civil War introduction to Spider-Man in the MCU, if you'd have said like, oh, they're gonna do an MCU Spider-Man movie, you would have gone like, oh, I can it makes sense to me. I see how that character fits for sure,
and kind of seamlessly fits as well.
Yes, you could feel you'd know that, you know, especially as us nerds, you would know that before the movie came out and before the introduction, of course. But I do think that the Fantastic Four, and we've talked about this on this show before, it kind of it's just sort of tricky to see the story. And maybe, you know, I think sometimes with these, well, this is not even I'm not speculating. In Hollywood, sometimes they announce movies before they necessarily have a good idea for the movie. Mm-hmm. So maybe this was a thing where they announced, and part of the announcement is you own the IP and, you know, you're going to make it. So you're going to make it. And John Watts had a vague pitch probably, but you know, the details weren't there, and they just haven't broken it yet. And, or, you know, as the story goes, whatever Watts' thoughts on it are not Feige's thoughts. So, but I think that it's a tricky puzzle to solve, or it's sort of, I don't know what the obvious FF in an MCU in the MCU movie is. I don't know what that movie is, and I guess John Watts maybe hasn't figured out either. But I also don't know who I would. I don't know who I would want to. I don't. You know. I know Peyton Reed's had a FF movie in his head for yonks, but you know. I don't know. I don't.
Is it the movie that fits the MCU as it is?
Yeah.
And as they want to go, yeah.
You know, I also think it's interesting that this news has hit on the week of Doctor Strange coming out, right? Because you've got that as a, we've speculated on this podcast before about the multiverse playing into the introductions of the X-Men, of the Fantastic Four, you know, is the timing purely coincidental or not? Who knows? Maybe we see in 2 weeks more something with that context in mind. Who knows?
It's difficult to also think about, you know, who would direct this movie, because, you know, mostly people that are directing this size of movies is basically Marvel movies. There isn't, you know, a huge amount of stuff outside of that. And then you look at what used to be the chain, and, you know, think back to the last Fantastic Four movie, and it was Josh Trank coming off Chronicle, and I don't know. I struggle to think of like what are those kind of breakout genre movies even that have directors that we're going, oh, well, they would be a natural fit to maybe make the next step. I mean, Kevin Feige seems to just pluck from everywhere now.
Smash cut to Robert Eggers is the new Fantastic Four. Alexander Skarsgård and Anya Taylor-Joy are Mr. and Mrs. Fantastic. And that's not actually too bad.
That's actually really good.
I can think of worse pitches.
Yeah.
Who'd be the thing? It has to be from the cast of Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe. Yeah, hell yeah. And
he's Doctor Doom. Oh, no, you can't. Yeah, you can't make Dafoe another Marvel villain, can you?
No.
Who'd be the Human Torch from the cast of The Northman only? Oh, the little boy. The little boy version of Alexander Skarsgård.
Yeah, yeah. Ethan Hawke is a thing. There you go.
Sick.
I haven't seen The Northman yet, so I'm not
quite
as on point with the cast. What about Bjork as the thing?
Yeah, cool. No, she could play Oh god, I'm trying. No, I can't. I'm trying
Malice.
Malice. Yeah, she could play Malice. She could play Paste Pot Pete.
Okay, so commiserations to John Watts, who
doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist. I feel mean, but it's too good a
bit. That's the reason, by the way. That's the reason the story's come out, is because the two teenagers sitting on each other's shoulders wearing a trench coat were like, we can't do this a fourth film. We can't direct a fourth movie like this. I'm tired, boy on the bottom. I'm actually tired. That on the bottom is Watts, and the top is John. And like, Watts is kind of tired. His shoulders hurt. He can't hold the position all the time. He can't be at Video Village, you know, trying to stay upright and not be shaking around.
Do you think he does the next Spider-Man now, or do you think he's just done with Marvel for a bit?
No, I think he's finished. I think he's finished with Marvel. I think he found himself unenthusiastic about Fantastic Four, and he thought, "I'm going to go use the cachet that I've built up to go and make something that I actually want to do."
Does a fucking Russo's and makes, what was that Tom Holland movie called? Cherry?
Yeah, what? Apple TV.
Yeah. It bombs, and he comes crawling back to us to Feige in his throne. He kisses Feige's hand, and he's like, "Yes, I'll make episode 3 of your Wakanda show. Please, Kev, please take me back." That's, I think, I could see that for the two teenagers in the trench coats.
I, it's a separate debate, but I really do wonder how much cachet directing these Marvel movies does build up, like.
It's more than zero, but not massive.
Is it?
Cool.
Is it?
I've watched Russo movies that I wouldn't have watched otherwise, like 21 Bridges or whatever.
They didn't direct that, did they?
They didn't direct it, they produced it.
I
watched it because it was,
I mean, you're
Marvel
also
guys.
You're also talking about the Russos, but I just mean, like, I don't know, did Eternals do anything positive for Chloe Zhao's career?
No, but that's because the movie was bad.
Did Captain Marvel open any doors for Ryan Fleck and Anna Boden? I genuinely think it's questionable, because it's so hard to see what these directors are, you know, actually bringing to the projects that wasn't there already. Like
that's fair. Yeah.
It really does feel like the only one who has really leveraged it is Taika Waititi. I don't think yet, really, because is his career any more substantially interesting post Black Panther than it was pre?
I mean, it's not post Black Panther yet, though, is it? Like, he went straight from Black Panther 1 to working on Black Panther 2. I think also he was doing films of a reasonable scale before Black Panther anyway. So
yeah, I just wonder, like, are these directors, are they really, you know, I'm sure they get, you know, well rewarded financially for working on these movies, but is it allowing the majority of them to go off and make the project that they want to make next? Are these movies the goal? You know, is the payday itself the goal?
I think the test will be the Russos. I think that's the only example we have so far where they are clearly trying. I mean, they started their own production company post Avengers, I think, right? That's a newer thing. They are attempting to segue that success into.
No, but for the Russos, you're talking about, you know, the kind of the biggest directors within the Marvel world.
Yeah, but
right?
John Watts, just from a success point of view, isn't that far off that. Now, that's one of the biggest grossing movies of all time at this point. No Way Home. Yes. So he could make the same play, and we'll see if it goes anywhere. But that's the money
I
is.
I just, you know, think for all of them, like, are we expecting that Kate Shortland's going to get handed $100 million budget to work on something else? Is Destin Daniel Cretton going to get the next indie movie he wanted to make financed because he did Shang-Chi?
No, I think I think the opposite, which is he signs a first look with Disney Plus to do more stuff. Like, it's almost the opposite. Yeah. It's that the kind of golden handcuffs of the first of these projects with these directors, then they go, great, I just made whatever, $5 million for making Shang-Chi. I'll now go and get that elsewhere. I can't. So I'm forced to to kiss the ring. Or make a fucking Star Wars, right? That's the best option. Like, that's the best kind of pivot that they can do. Like, oh, can I speak to, you know...
I do think it is. It's like, you know, rather than going off and making new stuff, it's, you know, welcome to the machine. Here's an episode. Mm. Here's an episode of The Mandalorian. Here's a live action Disney movie. We can give you 6 episodes of this thing that maybe you'd have liked to have been a $40 million movie, but we'll, you know, we'll kind of make it cheap and put it on Disney Plus. Like, I don't know. Like, that feels like the more likely outcome for these filmmakers.
Welcome to the machine. That's nothing you'll say on this pod has chilled me to my core, such as that.
Not even El Muerto.
Welcome to the machine. even El Muerto. But again, I'll contrast this moment of this chat with again, the El Muerto thing is the plus side, kind of, I think, as I made my point earlier. That's the other side of that. That's the more hopeful. God, am I weirdly becoming like a Sony cinematic multiverse of Marvel characters, Spider-Man characters, like Stan? I don't know, but like, that is the better version of this.
Next item.
Who directed Morbius? What's his name?
Daniel Espinosa. Yeah,
is Daniel Espinosa? What's he get to do next? Does he get to go back and handle budgets on the level of Life and Safe House?
He makes Morbius 2.
I don't think he does that either. Like, who directed the first Venom? Gangster Squad guy. Zombieland guy. Ruben Fleischer,
and then Andy Serkis on the second one.
Yeah. I feel like Ruben Fleischer has got another project. Maybe he's the answer. Maybe he's the answer for what happens next. I'm sure Ruben Fleischer. Did he go back and do Zombieland 2? Is that what the answer was?
Did, yeah.
Yeah.
or checks notes. Oh, no,
he did Uncharted. There we go. Okay, so Ruben Fleischer is the real winner here.
I guess
because he's got another box office hit with Uncharted. Stayed in house at Sony, paid his dues, and yeah, now he's laughing all the way to the bank. Okay, so it's not dark. You know, Destin Daniel Cretton too could be directing a poorly received video game adaptation that makes a lot of money. Okay. Not as much to discuss on these news items, but I think it's probably worth covering them anyway. Across the Spider-Verse movies have been pushed back. So the first one, rather than being released in October this year, will now be released in June next year. They're making a big deal in the promotion of this movie about how big it is, that it's got more animators working on it than any animated movie before, and how huge the crossover's going to be and all of the characters that are going to be showing up. Oh, I hope it's good. I really hope they have more they can chew with this.
It does feel like the strength of the first one was the focus on Miles's character journey.
It does feel like, oh, I hope they're not flying too close to the sun. Like, there isn't too much hubris from what they achieved in the first one.
Yeah, James, to your point, or both your points, like movie one, the pitch is it's a really good story. Movie two, the pitch is there's so many guys that are working on this.
Yeah. Doing the comments. And there's not just one movie. This is part one. We're making two of them.
Yes. If not more.
Mm. Yeah. So that's been pushed back to June next year. And then Shazam 2 has been pushed back by 5 days.
I hope they get 5 extra days work out of it.
Well, this is, it should be said, to move out directly of the way of Avatar 2. I maybe would have moved a little bit further.
They're banking on the failure of Avatar 2, as a lot of people on the internet are. Because otherwise they're going to look like idiots for their
last
10 years of no one cares about Avatar.
I am fascinated to see how Avatar 2 does, because...
Me too, because there are children who weren't born who will be hyped for this movie.
Well, and also, like, when the first Avatar came out, I was like, people don't care about this, right? And then the box office just kept going and going. And, like, I have rewatched Avatar since, because I'm not one of the people who thinks, like, gotta remember that movie existed. Like... Yeah, there's loads of memorable shit in it. Like, there's 12-foot-tall blue people who fuck by putting their hair together, and there's floating islands, and it's Pocahontas and Sigourney. Like, loads of great.
As much as Ham 2 or
loads of great memorable stuff in Avatar.
However, when that first movie
came out, I was like, but I mean, people don't care about 3D, right? And they don't care about, like, it's just another movie. Like, I know it's James Cameron and he did Titanic, but are people really going to show up? And it was like, yes, and they're going to keep showing up and keep showing up. And it still boggles my mind. So, like, a sequel to Avatar, I'm like, are people going to turn up for it? And I'm like, well, I am as soon as I can see it. Yeah, that's that is one of the movies that I want to see on the big screen.
The thing for me is, as someone who didn't go and see the first Avatar, I think most people were going because they were making a big deal out of how, like, this is the first properly 3D movie and how they'd re-kitted out loads of cinemas.
They're doing it again, James. It's new 3D.
The cinemas had a vested interest in making the,
different
the 3D,
3D
pay
now.
For itself, so they really pushed it. So I don't know, maybe that's what's going to
get
people through the door again.
More different 3D, Jim Cameron's back. It's the first of 12 Avatar movies.
I think you can only do that once, and I think it would be a surprise if a sequel to a movie...
I don't think it'll make 3.6 billion, but...
Wait, James, finish that thought.
I was going to say, if a sequel to a movie that came out 10 years ago that no one really thinks of that fondly and that was mostly driven by a change in technology that has been and gone.
Yes, but a film director that released a sequel to a film from a period before with a new technology. The movie's Terminator and then the sequel Terminator, T2, Judgment Day, and that was James. James Cameron. He just
That's the thing, right? I would never bet against James Cameron.
If it was anybody else making it, you'd go, there's no way this is. Who gives a shit? But for whatever reason, he's got something. His whole career, he's
too big to fail. That's what he is. Too big to fail.
Okay, well, let's talk about something which isn't too big to fail, which is Shazam: Fury of the Gods. Moved 5 days out of the way of Avatar. Maybe there's enough room for both of them. First one, I think we all agree, pretty good, right?
Yeah.
And felt like its own thing, that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't weighed down by DC. It was distinct from Marvel. Good, we liked it.
Yeah, could have had a few of the edges sanded down a little bit just to make it a bit more tonally consistent, but...
Well,
broadly speaking, a good movie. I would happily rewatch it.
Well, they're back.
I'm not that excited for the sequel. If I dig deep into my soul, I don't know. I just
not excited, but I kind of feel fairly confident that it's going to be a solid good time.
Yeah.
Original cast is back. We've now got the whole super family now. So, you expanded roles, you know, I can spoil the end of it now, but for Adam Brody and Megan Good and DJ Catrona and, all of those grown up versions of the kids. And then this one is adding Rachel Zegler, from West Side Story, Helen Mirren.
That's who?
I can't remember.
Okay.
I think she is a non-superhero at the start of the movie, at least. Maybe she gets a pat, but I get the impression she's like a, maybe friend or romantic interest to one of the kids.
She's the friend. Cool.
Maybe they're older, but, who, again, are older and sexier now. Jack Dylan Grazer is a like a heartthrob at this point, right?
Sure. James, you're on the TikTok. Is that can you vouch for that?
He was in that
the kind of account they're following.
He was in that show. What was that show he was in that everyone was like, oh, we are who we are, and everyone was like, oh, he's a hunk. Anyway, Lucy Liu, Helen Mirren, so I don't know. David F. Sandberg's back directing again.
You're missing Piercy B. Piercy B is the biggest.
He's in Black Adam.
Interesting. Yes. Okay. I did forget.
It's a different movie. It's completely
different movie. Connected? Question mark?
No. Nothing to do with each other, and they'll never interact.
Okay. Fine. They'll never fight. There'll never be a beef between those two.
Yeah. So, So yeah, I don't know. I'll turn up to see. I mean, who knows if I'll turn up to see it in cinemas 5 days after Avatar. I certainly intend to, but I'm going to have two children at that point, so.
And you'll still be in the 3D world of Avatar: The Shape of Water. You'll be underwater. You'll have drowned.
The Shape of Water.
It is called that.
The form of water.
Can't prove that it isn't called that.
The color of water.
Wait,
the way of water. The way.
It's not even the weight. Way. It's the way.
The weight.
Yeah. The weight of water is the Catherine Bigelow movie, isn't it? The Shape of Water is the Guillermo del Toro movie.
Yeah.
The color of water, I don't think it's anything.
Blue. Yeah.
It's blue.
Color of money. Good movie.
The form of water is what the Wonder Twins used to say.
Wall Street 2, Money Never Talks. That interesting film. Shia LaBeouf, good actor. Unproblematic.
Hercules.
Way of the Warrior is the Deep Space Nine season 4 premiere.
Unfortunately, Shia LaBeouf way too cancelled to be Hercules.
We have to resolve this Hercules question by finally,
his proclamations of not being famous anymore have come to pass. a couple of movies announced that I think we were
on David Washington Hercules.
Oh yeah, I like that. No, I do like that.
That's kind of good.
Yeah, I like that. Right, great. Okay, pencil that in. I can't do better than that so far.
It's penciled.
The Batman 2 has been announced, and Venom 3 has been announced. So, sequels to movies that are both better than Dr. Michael Morbius will be happening. Dr. Michael Morbius 2, as of yet, not announced. Which of those are you more excited about, the Batman 2 or Venom 3?
Venom 3.
It's probably Venom 3, you know. I loved the Batman. Like, I think it's a brilliant movie, but...
You're insane.
I don't know how you follow that up.
I have a lot of fun with those movies, but I can't actually be excited for one, like, 3 years out. I know I can get the dose of serotonin I need by just, you know, loading
just banging
up,
your hand in a door,
loading up YouTube and watching Tom Hardy jump in a lobster tank. Like that's fine. I can't actually say I'm looking forward to the sequel to those movies more than the sequel to The Batman, which I think showed a lot of promise.
I just, my enjoyment of The Batman is based entirely around it as a standalone, like, graphic novel of a movie. And I sort of don't care what they do with it next, if they ever do anything with it next.
My enjoyment of The Batman is based entirely around me just having the theme tune come into my head sometimes. During the day. Bum, 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 bum. It's just cool. It's cool. It's so
sick. It is cool, yeah.
Nothing to it. It's just like two notes, Giacchino. That's probably why he can direct fucking Werewolf by Night, because he's like, oh, I've written a theme for the Batman in 8 seconds. It's two notes. Peace out. I'm going to direct a show about Werewolf. Dark Castle by Night is going to be good in it. It's going to be a huge star. I'm done with music. Sorry, Joe, but I know that you walked down the aisle to a Giacchino.
To the Batman theme tune.
Yeah, and you were doing a step, like, step, 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 step.
Again, I need to reiterate, I was, as is tradition, stood at the front of an aisle. My wife then walked down it.
I bet you there's somebody in the world that will walk down the aisle to that Batman thing. It's just the you know, Murphy's Law. And yes, I did watch Interstellar last night, so I'm thinking about Murphy's Law. That's a true fact.
Good movie. If anyone wants to hear it, my wife walked down the aisle to Shambhala, which is a Lost season 3 track, which Michael Giacchino was adapting from an original song, which turns up in the episodes as well. And we then had, transcribed and was played on the organ. So it was all very nice.
And then because when I was there, it was a lovely wedding. And then what's interesting is at the wedding, the reception was, it was all in slow-mo. And it was, that music was like high on the, we were just kind of like hugging on the beach and drinking out of conch. It was a really special wedding.
It's actually the episode where Hurley and Charlie drive the VW van down the hill. That's when the music's playing. So
We did that as well, of course, to conclude the bit.
Over,
there was a bat
over the lawn of the establishment.
Yes.
Okay. Last piece of news before we.
And there's more news
before we call this a night. There is apparently an Amanda Waller TV series in development at HBO Max, which Viola Davis is in talks to join. I don't know. I haven't seen Peacemaker because it's still not available legally, which is obviously the case for all of the hosts of this podcast. None of us have seen a second of it, and would never break the law to do so. So I don't really know what they're planning to do on HBO Max. It seems like stuff is getting cancelled as much as it's moving ahead. I couldn't even begin to guess what an Amanda Waller TV show could be, because I guess it can kind of be anything, right? She's involved with villains generally, and it could do anything within the DC universe, and I'm not even sure which DC universe she's in. She is in the DCEU, isn't she? Yeah.
I mean. Sorry, this is gonna. We should just end the podcast after I say this, but it's How to Get Away with Murdering a Superhero, right? Like, that's the show. Gonna be. Thank you. Goodbye.
No, genuinely, I think that's good. So, listeners, thank you for tuning into this this nonsense on superhero movie and TV news. As we said at the start of the episode, we are doing, we just finished Moon Knight on the main feed. We have done a Dr. Michael Morbius episode. We've got Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness coming up very soon. And then next month, we'll be diving into Ms. Marvel and any other superhero movies that are released after Doctor Strange. I can only imagine there's going to be six. So, yeah, we'll do all of those. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.